This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Now a hair growth product with natural ingredients and fast results. Reveal from GCNLife.com.
Black holes, the cosmos, space and time travel, science and technology, brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku,
and GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Every week on Science Fantastic, we profile some of the most amazing developments in science and technology that touches our lives and even changes history. Well, with us today, we have a treat. We have another theoretical physicist talking about Stephen Hawking, perhaps one of the greatest theoretical physicists of our time. And usually, when somebody writes a biography of a famous person, what they do is they interview the people surrounding them, and usually they're professional historians. They're not right there in the forefront of change. However, this book is different. This book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics by Leonard Mlodinow. And I should point out that he is a theoretical physicist, like myself. He got his PhD, in fact, at the University of California at Berkeley, where I got my PhD. And he spent 15 years collaborating, living in close quarters with Stephen Hawking to get one of the most intimate portrayals of his life, his time, his struggles, his thinking process. So once again, we are talking about the life and times of one of the great minds of our age, Professor Stephen Hawking. And if you want to know more about Science Fantastic, go to my website. It's mkaku.org, mkaku.org. We have 4 million fans on Facebook, and I've written 4 New York Times bestsellers. The latest one is about the space program. The book is called The Future of Humanity, Our Destiny in the Universe. As we go back to the moon, onto Mars, and begin perhaps dreaming about one day going to the stars. Well, today we're going to talk about somebody who actually did dream about going to the stars, and that's theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking. And with us today, once again, is Leonard Mlodinow, who's written a unique book, a book written by another physicist, a colleague, a collaborator, with intimate knowledge of Stephen Hawking, and someone who for 15 years had an intimate, close relationship, not just with Stephen, but with his family as well. And as you know, Professor Hawking spent a lifetime struggling against ALS, a debilitating, paralyzed disease leading to paralysis, which would have crushed any individual. I remember when I first went and visited Stephen Hawking, he invited me to give a talk about string theory, which is one of the things I work on, and I had a chance to visit his house. And I was amazed that there were contraptions around his house that allowed him to function. One device could actually, you push a button and turn the page of a journal. And I realized here was a man who wanted to do physics so much that he was willing to make all these sacrifices even in the face of a debilitating, paralyzing disease. Well, once again, with us today is Leonard Mlodinow, author of a number of great books, including The Grand Design, A Briefer History of Time, written with Stephen Hawking. But the latest book is Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. So, Leonard, first question for you is, when you were a kid now, years and years ago, what steered you in the direction of science and eventually physics?
Well, when I was a kid, I liked two things. I liked, other than playing baseball, I liked chemistry and I liked math. I like chemistry when I discovered that I could make formulations that blew up things or flew into the sky. And so those were the more innocent days where you could actually get those chemicals and people weren't afraid of terrorists. And I had a lot of fun making spectacular reactions in chemistry. But in physics, that was the more intellectual side, or really in math. I was fascinated by what I read about Einstein and this idea of curved space. I just remember trying to wonder what does that mean? And in the seventh or eighth grade, I found a book on, which I still have, on non-Euclidean geometry, which is the geometry of curved space, where the angles of triangles don't add up to 180 and so on. All the things you learn in school are wrong. And I learned that there's a whole other reality out there. In a way, it's like science fiction, but it's real. And it's not what you learn in school. It's something different. There are different possibilities for the universe. And that really fascinated me. And so I went along through my high school years with those two interests, chemistry and math. And when I got to college, I read a book by Richard Feynman, the great iconic physicist. And that really inspired me to move more toward physics from chemistry. And that, and the fact that chemistry didn't really have enough math for me. I really liked math, and I thought that the math was too simple in chemistry. And I should point out that they didn't appreciate you making bombs anymore when you got to college. You had to do organic chemistry and other kind of more boring experiments with regular chemicals.
Yes, that's what you had to do. Now, in your book, you have a rather intimate portrayal of Professor Stephen Hawking over a 15-year period. So first of all, how did you meet Stephen Hawking, and how did you collaborate, and what is it like to work up close to a great mind like that?
Well, he contacted me after he read my first two books. My first book, which I remember talking to you about, Michio, on your program many years ago, was called Euclid's Window. It was about curved space, that very subject that got me interested in math and physics. And my second book was about Feynman, called Feynman's Rainbow, and was about how I learned to follow my passions from my interactions with Feynman when I was first at Caltech. And he was looking for somebody to work with, because it's so hard for him to write, to type, to communicate. And he wanted to find someone who had a sense of humor and whose writing he liked, but also who was an expert in physics who could really understand his work. So that really narrows down the community.
And exactly.
He doesn't it? Yeah. As you and me and not too many others. So he had his people contact my agent one day, and I just got a phone call saying, would you like to work with Stephen Hawking? And who's going to say no to that? So I was very honored. Working with him was, first of all, it was a great honor, but it took some getting used to, because I don't know if I should tell your audience how he communicated. Maybe they may not know.
Go ahead.
Well, back in those days, he could move his thumb, and so he had essentially a mouse to click with. And in later years, he had a sensor on his glasses, and he would twitch his cheek, and so it picked up essentially a mouse click. And then on his wheelchair, there was mounted a computer screen, which was attached to a computer. And it was like playing a video game. There were groups of words, and the cursor would highlight different groups. And he had to click when it got to the groups of letters, when it got to the group of letters he was looking for. And then it would go on the individual letters, and he'd click again to catch a letter. And in that way, he'd compose painstakingly his sentences and his words. And when he was done, he could click somewhere else to have it read.
Let me ask you a question. How many words could he communicate in any given minute? Approximately how many words per minute?
That's what I was about to say. He could, when I was working with him, it was about 6 words a minute. It was about 6 words per minute. That's what, 7 words. So that sentence would take him a minute. So it took some getting used to. And at first, I would daydream or get impatient or, you know, surf the web. But, you know, I soon learned that this was actually a real advantage to me, that it took him so long, because I would sit next to him and I could see his sentence begin to form. And I could either complete it for him and save him some time, or I could think about what he was saying while he was doing it.
Let's take a short commercial break. And after the break, we're going to continue the discussion of the late Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics by Leonard Mlodinow. And you are listening to Science Fantastic. And if you want to get on 100 radio stations and the Internet, give us a call at 612 612- 564-8135 and ask that question about science that you've always wanted to but never had a chance. So stay tuned as we continue a discussion of the late Stephen Hawking, his life and times.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Go to GCNteam.com or call 855-GCN-MALL. That's 855-426-6255. GCNteam.com or 855-426-6255. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire fireplace grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. And today we're talking about a rather intimate portrayal of one of the great minds of our time, the late Professor Stephen Hawking, written by Professor Leonard Mlodinow. He's a professor of theoretical physics, and he's the author of this new book, Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. You know, when I was young, we of course idolized people like Albert Einstein or Isaac Newton, but one problem was that we couldn't interact with them. We couldn't ask them questions. And the question I wanted to ask them is, how do you think? I mean, what leads you to converge on a new scientific principle? Forget the math and the details. What led you to a new concept, a new picture, a new worldview of the universe? And unfortunately, they had already passed away. But Professor Stephen Hawking, in our time, has had a chance to interact with the public. And Leonard Mlodinow is a professor of theoretical physics and author of this book, Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. So we get an intimate portrayal of the man, his relationship with his family, the public, and also science itself. So Leonard, where we left off, we were talking about how difficult it was to work with the late Professor Stephen Hawking. But what was it like to actually write a book, actually co-write two books with him? What was it like? Because, of course, a book consists of thousands of words.
Well, the way we worked was we would we first spend a year, and Stephen was had extreme attention to detail. And so you would think, because it's so hard for him to communicate and it only came out at six words a minute, that he might take shortcuts, or if we had a disagreement about something, he may tend to give in. But he wasn't like that. At the end of a conversation, it would usually be me who was exhausted, not him. And we first spent about a year debating what should go into the book I'm talking about, The Grand Design, now our second book. And after that, we split up the work, who would write which parts of it. And then we would trade them by email and look at each other's. And then we would meet for long periods of time and spend night and day in Cambridge going over them really word by word. And, you know, it sounds like there's not much, six words a minute sounds pretty slow. But if you think about how many words there are in a book and how many minutes that takes, it's not all that many minutes. For most people, writing a book is more editing and rewriting than it would be the typing, even at six words a minute. So that wasn't, it's really not so much the getting the words out as it is getting the book right, getting the ideas out. And as I said, he was very demanding in that sense, where everything just had to be right. He was a perfectionist.
Okay, well, when I first met Stephen Hawking, he spoke in a garble, and his PhD students would, in some sense, the joke was, they would have to have a PhD in understanding the garble. And so some students were actually chosen on their ability to understand the garbling that came out when Stephen Hawking talked. Later, of course, he lost control of his vocal cords, used his finger, and later just began to twitch and thoughts. So what was it like now for the people surrounding them? Did they have to sacrifice because, of course, he had to have 24-hour surveillance? The slightest medical hiccup could cause a fatal problem. He had to have medical care right on the spot at any given time. Was it trying for the people surrounding him, his wife, his kids, his family? What was it like to see the family up close?
Well, it was very trying for everybody. But what happened was, after a while, first of all, you got used to it. But secondly, you learned the shortcuts. First of all, you could watch what he was typing and sometimes finish his sentences. You could also, he had ways of saying yes and no with his expression. So you could often, if you knew where the conversation was going, you could give him various alternatives to respond to. But really most interesting was that he developed a very sophisticated kind of nonverbal communication. I mean, he had obviously frowns and smiles, and he could raise eyebrows for yes, no, I like this, I don't like that. But that's beyond that. He had a much more complex way of communicating, where when you're talking to him, if you're phrasing things right and you're watching his face, you could really understand in a very complex manner how he felt about something. It was very interesting, almost supernatural. I mean, I felt sometimes like I knew what he was thinking without even knowing how I knew it. He was transmitting through his facial expressions to me, and I wasn't quite sure on the conscious level how I had this feeling about what he was thinking, but I did feel that. And so I thought that was really an interesting adaptation that he had. And it's not just me. I mean, I talked to his family and his friends, and they all say that you could tell so much from his face, that his face really spoke volumes.
Okay, now let's try to summarize some of the work of Professor Stephen Hawking. When we talk about Einstein, we talk about E equals mc squared. We talk about curved space. When we talk about Stephen Hawking, we talk about black holes. And even children know that, well, black holes are black because everything gets sucked in, nothing comes out. But if you were to summarize his work, would you say that in some sense, black holes are gray, not really black? How would you summarize his body of work?
Well, he did five major accomplishments, and the first two were to talk about the Big Bang and the laws of black holes that are derived from Einstein's theory, but not relativity, but not quantum theory. And then his most famous work was his third major piece of work, where he started to incorporate quantum into his ideas. And that's where he discovered what you're talking about, the Hawking, so-called Hawking radiation, that black holes aren't really black, that because of quantum effects, the immense gravity of the black holes forms pairs of particles just outside of it, in which one falls back in and one escapes into space or escapes the black hole. And in that way, the black hole is actually drained. That's kind of radiation, and the black hole is actually drained of its energy very slowly, very gradually. But theoretically, if you waited long enough, an isolated black hole through this process would shrink and then disappear. And that was to the minds of the physicists at the time, revolutionary, because the idea and the understanding of black holes was that they can never shrink. If some things that fall in never come back out again. And here he was saying that things actually, because of quantum effects, come back out. And so that was a very bold and adventurous thing, to a piece of work to look at. And he had to have a really open mind to accept that, because it was so, went so against the grain of conventional wisdom.
Now, one thing that astonished me when I read some of his work is the fact that he's willing to admit that he's wrong sometimes. Physicists get very huffing and puffing whenever someone criticizes their work. But I saw one paper where Stephen simply says, the previous paper I wrote on this topic is totally wrong. Disregard the previous paper. This paper is correct. And lately, I mean, in the later part of his life, he had a controversy with, string theorists. On the question of what happens if you send the encyclopedia into a black hole, Hawking thought that all the information might be lost forever. Nothing comes out again. Once you throw an encyclopedia, all that information is lost. But string theorists, of which I'm one, says no, that we conserve information. So what are your thoughts, given the fact that Hawking actually changed his mind on this topic?
Well, that's a very interesting question. That is one of his, I think, greatest traits as a physicist, is to be able to change his mind, to admit that he was wrong, or even to accept contradictions. And he had so many contradictions in his life. He's supposed to die and he's living. Start with that one. And so he was very flexible in that way. And with regard to the information, yes, he made a bet that the information is lost. And if you think about what I said and combine it with what you said, imagine that you throw an encyclopedia into the black hole, and now the black hole eventually shrinks by radiating just non-encyclopedia information, just radiating energy out. What happened to the information that was in the encyclopedia? Stephen said it was lost, and he made a famous bet on it. But then he was doing the math, and he decided that actually it's not lost, and that he was wrong, and he conceded the bet. And ironically, however, a lot of people didn't believe his calculation. He had to do certain approximations and wave his hands a little bit. So even his co-better, Kip Thorne, wasn't convinced by Stephen's reversal. And the guy that they bet with, John Preskill, who Stephen was saying, okay, you win the bet, he wasn't convinced by Stephen's argument either. So the argument went on. As far as I know, it's still going on. But it's interesting that they were all more interested in the truth than in being right. And I think that's a very important trait for a physicist, and not all physicists have that trait.
Right, exactly. And once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call at 612-564-8135. A special guest is Professor Leonard Mlodinow. The book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics, now available at your bookstore.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
As the nation remembered 9/11, President Donald Trump and his Democratic rival Joe Biden said they'd have no politics on this day and marked the 19th anniversary of the attacks at two memorial services.
19 years ago on this day, 40 brave men and women triumphed over terror and gave their lives in defense of our nation. Their names and their stories are forever inscribed on the eternal roll call of American heroes. Today we pay tribute to their sacrifice, and we mourn deeply for the nearly 3,000 precious and beautiful souls who were taken from us on September 11th.
Joe Biden approached those who'd lost loved ones at Ground Zero, and President Trump vowed that America will always rise up, stand tall, and fight back at the Shanksville, Pennsylvania site where hijacked Flight 93 crashed. This is USA Radio News. President Donald Trump presented the Congressional Medal of Honor to U.S. Army Sergeant Major Thomas Patrick Payne for his heroics in a 2015 daring raid that rescued 75 ISIS hostages from a prison in northern Iraq, with Trump praising him as one of the bravest men anywhere in the world. Trump hailed Payne's heroic, selfless actions that led to 20 ISIS terrorists being killed and the saving of 75 of the captives. Payne, age 36, is the first living member of the Delta Force to receive the Medal of Honor, the highest decoration a member of the military can be given. Nearly 10,000 North Carolinians had their mail-in ballots accepted during the first week of voting in the United States, according to data released by the State Board of Elections. Of the ballots returned so far, 6,155 are from Democrats, compared to only 1,248 from Republicans. More than 750,000 absentee ballots have been requested so far, with Democrats accounting for 70%. This is USA Radio News.
If you or a loved one is a survivor of abuse by Boy Scouts of America representatives as far back as the 1970s, we urge you to speak up. We'll stand with you and get you the help and financial compensation you deserve. A jury in Portland, for example, awarded $18.5 million in punitive damages in one Boy Scout sexual abuse case. The Boy Scouts of America filed for bankruptcy, and funds have been set aside to compensate those injured. Time is limited, and so are the funds. Call today. Don't wait. For free information on how to file your claim, call All Survivors Advocates right now. We have a long track record in helping our clients get the legal justice and compensation they deserve. Please, we are ready to help you. Call today.
800-364-2984. 800-364-2984. 800-364-2984. That's 800-364-2984.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Today we're talking about the late Stephen Hawking. The book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics, written by a professor of theoretical physics, Leonard Mlodinow. He got his PhD in theoretical physics, as I did, from the University of California, Berkeley. He's taught at Caltech. The book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. He's written other books, including The Grand Design and A Briefer History of Time. And we are talking about one of the great minds of our time. Now, Leonard, let me ask you a question. This disease that he had, ALS, would have crushed any ordinary individual. I mean, thinking about it, you have a death warrant. You know you're not going to live much longer than so many years. Your body is wasting away. You can barely move your fingertips. I mean, what kept him going? What made him tick, given the fact that he had actually a rather long life given his disease? but it was something that was hanging over his head. He could die instantly at any given time. What was it like for him to face those odds?
Well, this is really why I wrote the book, because I found that by getting to know Stephen and working with him and just being with him, he was a tremendous inspiration. You know, his whole everyday, his day-to-day world, people who see him in the media or in the movie, they get kind of an idealized, mythological version of Stephen Hawking, not the real one. In the real, his real life, he had to go through tremendous obstacles every minute, every hour of the day. For example, I talk in the book about how I see a bead of sweat going down his forehead, and that, you know, how that tickles, and you just wipe it away. But he couldn't do that. He had to just sit there and take it, or wait to see if one of his carers notices and comes to wipe it for him. But when he went to bed at night, he can't turn in bed. So you know how you get aches or you turn to be more comfortable? He's in a position, and he can't turn himself. That can be torture to somebody. He had his carers who would turn him periodically, but if he felt uncomfortable in some position, he couldn't change that. And later years of life, he had a lot of pain from his bones, because his bones were very brittle, and he had a lot of arthritis. So it was, you know, his life was a series of challenges, and yet he was happy. He was optimistic. He had a great sense of humor. He somehow learned to take control of his mind to, you know, like the ancient Stoics said, that happiness, real happiness comes from within. And if you have that, no one and no circumstances can take it from you. And he had somehow found that. And so that not only gave me perspective on my own little piddling problems, but it taught me that, you know, how to face them, that I can, you know, if a mosquito bites me and it's itching and it's really driving me nuts, that's my fault. I can learn to not mind it. I can learn to not feel it. And he really taught me, you know, showed me the way to approach such problems in life. And so that's really why I wrote the book, because if you see him going through his everyday life and his interactions with people, it's really teaches you something about your own life.
Now, I once read a biography of Stephen Hawking that said that as a grad student, he was rather actually ordinary. He was listless, unfocused. He had great potential. Everybody knew he was smart, but he didn't really apply himself. But then when he got this death warrant stating that he only has a few years more left to live, that really shook him up. Shook him up to the point where he said to himself, I have to work on something great. If you only have a few years left, why squander it simply getting drunk or dissipating yourself? Why not focus yourself? So what are your thoughts? Do you think that the disease in some sense also helped to make the man as well as destroy his body? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, not only are those my thoughts.
We have to take a short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to continue our dialogue with Leonard Mlodinow. The book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. And you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call, 612-564-8135 is the number to call if you want to get on national radio.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens. We support the amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Jeunesse products are designed by leading doctors in their field with natural ingredients and even stem cell technology. These products help your body perform and look better. Shop Jeunesse at GCNLife.com or call 1-844-443-6637. GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
Extendivite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. John Hess, 5 out of 5 stars. Awesome. Probably my only review, but at age 40, I was getting bad heart throb and left arm pain, mainly before bed. I even stopped smoking and drinking sodas for a month, and that didn't work. After one day of taking Extendivite, it was gone and hasn't returned in 3 years. I've ordered Extendivite 13 times, so Amazon just said. Juliet Hordick. I've ordered this product before in liquid form. It is fantastic. My whole family's been on it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Attention radio listeners, if you're concerned about the coming chaos after the November elections, this will be an extremely important message. Here's why. No matter what the outcome in November, catastrophic social upheaval is a very real possibility. Here's why this is important. Listen, we all know that silver and gold have been historic hedges against the uncertain waves of social chaos and unstable currencies. But did you know that there's been times in the past, during times of extreme hardship, when Americans put another store of value above even silver and gold? It's true, open pollinated seeds have been and could very well be the ultimate store of value in the coming hard times ahead. Go to SurvivalSeedBank.com to get heirloom seeds below wholesale. Visit SurvivalSeedBank.com this week and get hundreds of dollars in free bonuses. Beat the coming chaos. Beat rising food prices. But above all, don't wait. Beat the crowds by claiming your own Survival Seed Bank today.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, if you want to find out more about Science Fantastic, go to our website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org. We have 4 million fans on Facebook, and you can check out some of the things that I do, interviews, books, and things like that. Well, with us today is Leonard Mlodinow, PhD physicist, author of a new book, Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. We should also point out that Leonard has written a number of great books, including The Grand Design and A Briefer History of Time, and he is a collaborator with Stephen Hawking. Well, when we last left off, we were talking about, well, the fact that when Stephen was a young man, apparently he was rather unfocused, listless, didn't really apply himself until he got this death warrant that he only has a few years left to live, and he decided to focus on some of the biggest problems in physics, that is, the application of the quantum theory to Einstein's theory of general relativity and black holes and things like that. So, Leonard, do you think that's true in the sense that the illness, in some sense, might have destroyed a lesser mortal, but in some sense helped to create Stephen Hawking? What are your thoughts?
Well, Michio, not only do I agree and think it's true, but Stephen told me that. We were having a talk. We had a couple talks about that, and I was... We were talking about the effects of his illness on him. He thought that they were positive. I was shocked. He said that, you know, he was kind of a goof off when he was in college, and he didn't have any direction in life. And when he got this death sentence after a period of some months of being depressed, he suddenly almost had a revelation that he found a purpose and meaning in his life. And, you know, that's what we all seek. And that's what the famous Viktor Frankl, who wrote about, you know, the death camps in World War II, said that those who could survive that were those who had meaning and purpose in life. And that's what he found, and I think that was one of the major qualities that got him through for so many years. And the meaning that he found was, or the purpose, he realized he wanted to answer certain questions about existence. Why are we here? Where did the universe come from? Why does it have the character that it does, or the laws that it does? And he decided to dedicate what he thought would just be his last few years. It turned out to be decades, but he decided to dedicate those years to that, and it really drove him and it kept him going.
Now, let me ask you a question that I've always wanted to ask. And that is, in the early days of something called supergravity, that is a more powerful version of Einstein's theory of gravity, Stephen Hawking said we could be on the verge of the final theory, the theory of everything, the theory that eluded Einstein for the last 30 years of his life. But of course, supergravity and superstring theory is a very difficult theory, and it's sort of gotten bogged down in the last several years because it is so complex mathematically. New areas of mathematics are being created out of string theory. So what was Stephen Hawking's understanding of string theory, and did he think that this ultimate theory was in hand, or what were his final thoughts on that subject?
Well, it's funny because I think that was in the 80s where he made the famous statement that by the end of the century we'll have theory of everything, and he was basing that on string theory. So I talked to him. I asked him the question. It was some, I don't know what year it was exactly, 2005, 2010. I said to him, hey, I brought up that prediction that he made, and I said, so Stephen, you know, what do you say about this? And he says, I still believe that we will have the theory of everything by the end of the century. Of course, it was a new century.
End of which century, right?
Yeah, so the which century, exactly. He's still a believer in string theory, and M theory is really at the heart of the basis of our book, The Grand Design. So he believed that that was the answer, and that we should have patience.
Uh-huh. Okay, so his rule of thumb was have patience. There is a theory of everything. We just are not smart enough yet to figure out all the details.
Right, exactly. And, you know, at one point, Kip Thorne, his good friend, Nobel Prize winner from Caltech for gravity waves, he told me that that Stephen used to, in his very early years, used to do very rigorous physics, very mathematically correct physics, which is very hard to do and not necessarily that useful in the sense that we don't have to prove theorems like mathematicians do. We can make approximations and get to our answers. And he found that was just too hard at some point. And he changed. Again, he changed when he was sick and he had trouble doing that rigorous math. And he said, I'm going to do non-rigorous math because it'll get you the answers faster. But still not
okay.
Answer, right?
Let's take a short commercial break. And after the break, we're going to continue a discussion with Leonard Mlodinow now about his book, Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. And you are listening to Science Fantastic. Give us a call, 612-564-8135 is the number to call.
Stay at home. Public health concerns. The reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses. Your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day. But supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
If you have diabetes and you're on Medicare, Medicaid, or have private insurance, you may qualify for a new continuous glucose monitor. Managing your diabetes is crucial to your health. The new CGM can automatically and easily help you manage your diabetes more effectively. And by using a CGM, you can eliminate the one thing most people with diabetes dislike the most, finger sticks. Now you can automatically manage your diabetes and end the painful finger sticks. Solara Medical Supplies makes it simple for you to have a new CGM. We'll do all the insurance paperwork for you and deliver the newest in diabetic care technology right to your door. Take charge of your diabetes today with the help of a new continuous glucose monitor. Call now to learn more.
800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. That's 800-547-5331.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us today is physicist Leonard Mlodinow, who had an intimate look at the life and times of Stephen Hawking. So his book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. Now, I would be derelict unless I asked some question about Professor Hawking's private life, because, of course, the tabloids have had sensational headlines about his love life and so on and so forth. So I would be derelict unless I ask you a few questions about this. First of all, he had a second wife who some people claimed, including his first wife, claimed that the second wife was a gold digger out for his money, because, of course, Professor Hawking wrote monster bestsellers like A Brief History of Time. And according to the tabloids, one day he was left in the sun, left to die, according to the tabloids, left alone without any help. He couldn't scream for help. He couldn't get out of the harsh sun. Somebody left him out to die, said the tabloids. They interviewed his first wife, and the first wife said, the fault is the second wife because she's a gold digger. Well, you had a rather up-close viewpoint of everybody. Do you think the tabloids blew it out of proportion? Because Stephen Hawking himself told the tabloids to respect my private life. What are your thoughts?
Well, there were some people who believed in those rumors. Stephen denied it. His friend Kip Thorne, again, who I know fairly well, he also said it wasn't true. A police investigated and said they could find no evidence of any such thing. And, you know, I don't have firsthand knowledge of whatever happened or may have not happened or not happened, but that's the lay of the land that I got. And, you know, he and Elaine were very much in love as his second wife, but they also had a stormy relationship and they, you know, they had their conflicts. And, it wasn't that, just as Stephen was amazing in that despite his disability, he did a lot of very normal things. And he had normal relationships. So, it's, you know, to have a relationship where you argue with your spouse, is not that unusual. And so I don't know, you know, any firsthand knowledge of those accusations, but, situation is what I described.
Okay, well, according to Hollywood, the Hollywood version of romance, women fall in love with a man because he's charming and handsome and, of course, rich. Rich, of course, is nice. But Hawking was totally paralyzed. He could barely move his eyelids. And communicating with him was extremely problematic as a consequence. And yet, there were women who were attracted to him. So what was it? The charisma? Did he have some kind of animal magnetism? Or did people simply want to bask in his fame and maybe even his checkbook? I mean, what are your thoughts? Because there's been so much speculation about that.
Well, I would know how much of their people's motivation comes from external qualities, fame and money and all that. But I know that he was a very warm person. He could communicate. I mean, we wrote that thick book together, and we had a friendship. We went out to pubs. We went out to dinner many times. We had a regular relationship, even though, I mean, it does take a lot of time. It's something that you have to get to know him first before you can develop that. But he was a warm person. He loved other people. He and his carers were close. He would come to their family events. He would lend them money when they needed it. He had a great sense of humor, a great outlook. So, you know, obviously he wasn't, to use a dated term, Charles Atlas, you know, a weightlifter or the Hollywood, typical Hollywood star. But as a human being, as a person with a personality, he was a very attractive person. So, I can see how people, you know, could be attracted to him.
Now let me ask you a question about history. How will historians of the future view Professor Stephen Hawking, given the fact that we've now discovered gravity waves from outer space of colliding black holes? We've actually even photographed the event horizon of a black hole, which made history, something that came out of science fiction. Here's a photograph of the object, a black hole. So how do you think history will treat Stephen Hawking?
I think they'll view him as a great pioneer in something, the same the kind of thing you do, Michio, in how to unite or reconcile quantum theory and gravity. And it's one of the great questions of our time in the physics world, theoretical questions. And he really was a pioneer. And you know, don't forget, when he started doing it in the 60s, nobody much cared about it. They didn't care about black holes. Not many people worked on the early universe. And Stephen took it from there, made great progress, and made it actually a hot subject, a hot field, and I think he'll be remembered for that.
And isn't it true that in Einstein's waning years, that is the 1940s and 1950s, that he was sort of relegated to the side because the quantum theory, atomic physics, nuclear physics, that was the hot, sexy topic in physics, and people thought that Einstein was an old fuddy-duddy, that he was out of touch, that all the new breakthroughs were being made in the quantum theory. So didn't Stephen Hawking reverse that, given the fact that,
Yeah, exactly. And Einstein recognized that and talked about it, and that was in the 50s. And in the 60s, it was the same. And Richard Feynman, who I mentioned before, he mentioned that only dopes work in this area because there's no experimental data. He was commenting on the quality of people those fields attracted. I mean, general relativity, because everyone was working in quantum theory. And Stephen definitely was one who changed that completely and lifted the study of general relativity and gravity, to a height where the best people study instead of the worst.
So, in other words, Stephen Hawking was able to take the first giant steps toward applying the quantum theory to general relativity.
Right.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time. So, Leonard, thank you so much for being on Science Fantastic.
Thank you, Michio.
Once again, the book is called Stephen Hawking, A Memoir of Friendship and Physics. We should also point out that Professor Mladenow is the author of a number of great books, including The Grand Design, A Briefer History of Time, that he wrote with Stephen Hawking. And you are listening to Science Fantastic. Go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org, to find out what I'm up to. And if you want to get on 100 radio stations to ask a question about science, give us a call at 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters to the radio station and the website, and maybe you can get on Science Fantastic.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American made with American ingredients, employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus.
That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1-liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.